This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:36. You are with Kelvin and Ayman on the evening edition. And right now we are moving on to our next story. And that is about, you know, Bas and Amanah, but more so about Amanah, actually. Parti Amanah Negara and their place as an Islamic party in government. So this comes after comments by Islamic Renaissance Front founder and executive director, Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa, who we'll be speaking to in a moment, said that Amanah should declare that it is a post-Islamist party to distinguish its ideology from Bas.
In explaining what post-Islamism is, Dr. Farouk says that it is it reconciles liberal democracy with Islam, or in other words, is the understanding or recognition that while religion may provide salvation in the afterlife, politics is what provides welfare in this one.
According to him, there are a few benefits for Amanah if they were to declare their position as a post-Islamist party. For example, this will help them assure the separation of powers, reject religious or gender-based discrimination, and voice out for pluralism and equality between men and women.
And yeah, I can see the benefits of it. There are pros and cons to it, of course, in terms of declaring yourself as a post-Islamist party. In terms of the pros of it, as you mentioned just now, Kelvin, it really sets you apart from past, really. You can be a party that promotes pluralism, acceptance of other people from other religions and other races and all that. And it is important as an Islamic party to delineate yourself from PAS. PAS has set such a, I guess, a low bar in terms of reflecting, you know, what a possible Malaysia as an Islamic state would look like. So by delineating yourself or differentiating yourself from PAS by declaring yourself as a post-Islamic party, you can, you know, project this image as like, you know, we an Islamic party, but better than PAS because we accept everyone. But in terms of the whole landscape of Malaysian politics, mm-hmm. right, to identify as a post-Islamic party can be counterproductive as well in terms of gaining votes. So the idea of separating religion from politics, I guess, goes against the central tenet that, you know, Islam is the right way to govern a country. Islam is, you know, the best way, you know, to govern over people. So accepting that, you know, the religion should be separated from politics can be seen as an acceptance that, you know, the religion is flawed and it is not the way forward. So if you do identify yourself as a post-Islamic party, that may backfire in terms of gaining the voters that you want to, you know, get from PAS, because these are people who believe in PAS's ideology that Islam is the way. So if you were to separate yourself from that, it may, you know, it may be detrimental in terms of, you know, sort of convincing them to join your side and be like, you know, our version of Islamic governance and politics is better.
Yeah, it's also very, I think for me, it's just the fact that Amanah is a relatively new party compared to the other contenders who have had a lot of years and a lot of time to form their identity, to have a say in where they stand, what they believe in, and who they are meaning to represent. Amanah, on the other hand, I think because they haven't quite figured it out yet, and the obvious comparison, like, you know, when we were talking about a few days ago about DAP and MCA, the obvious comparison is, of course, PAS, right? Which looks like their shadow, or, you know, Amanah might be PAS's shadow, right, for that matter. So I think for a lot of voters, perhaps trying to figure out what the party stands for, who do they stand for? If you don't have that strong branding, you don't quite know where they're going to align themselves, right? Because party ties and party identification, people who choose to identify with a party, it impacts a lot of their lives, you know, because it ends up giving them the information they need to choose and know where a certain matter and how they should align themselves to a certain political issue. For example, it can influence their participation in elections. You know, if a political party asks you not to go and vote, you might be inclined to listen to that political leader because you trust where they stand. And, you know, at the same time, you are also able to, through having a strong branding, especially now in the time where we are about to see in the next general election, 18-year-olds being able to vote, because you do form your political opinions or rather you start forming your political opinions at such a young age, you do have to start getting into that process very early, you know, engage the grassroots. But of course, you cannot also do that if you don't necessarily have a strong message behind what your political party is.
Yeah, exactly. It's the communication side of things and the political messaging side of things that will be very important for Amanah when it comes to differentiating themselves from PAS. Because it's basically like two Islamic parties. So how are you different from the old one?
Yeah.
I mean, being in the Pakatan Harapan government and them sort of promoting the Rahmatan Lil Alamin kind of concept, which is compassion for all, that in a way can be used. Like, you know, we are even though Amanah is an Islamic party, it's an Islamic party that, you know, works for all Malaysians. So it's important for them to figure out who exactly they are. What is the identity that they are holding to or fighting for? Only then, once they have figured out who they really are, can they communicate better, conduct the political messaging better,
yeah,
in order to garner the votes and perhaps siphon some of the votes that would have gone to PAS.
After this, we will be going straight to the source of this story, who happens to be Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa, who is the founder and director of the Islamic Renaissance Front. So make sure you stay tuned for that. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 6:43 and you are listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Ayman, and we are talking about Parti Amanah Negara and the necessity, I guess, of rebranding themselves as a post-Islamist party. So we're going to have that, and that suggestion came from Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa, who is of the Islamic Renaissance Front, and we are joined by him right now. He is, again, the founder and director of IRF. Farouk, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Hi, welcome.
So as Islamic parties, what narratives do PAS and Amanah portray at the moment?
Well, I guess from history, we know that PAS has always intended for the formation of an Islamic state in Malaysia, which means that Sharia is invented in Malaysia. And, you know, the debate has been whether it should be implemented to all citizens, irrespective of whether they're Muslims or not, or whether it should only be to the Muslims. And I think we understand about that they wanted to do laws, they wanted to amputate hands of thieves, and so on and so forth. But Amanah basically was a kind of a splinter party that... I think if you look at history, we knew that they were ousted from PAS because of their agenda. Initially, like people like Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, who wrote a lot about post-Islamism as well, he was being labeled with so many labels. And finally, you know, like they decided that, you know, these progressives must leave PAS, and they form Amanah. But the thing is that it's still unclear until today about Amanah. You know, to me, like, I wrote way back in 2013 in the New Mandala, it's an online portal of the Australian National University, mm-hmm, and I said that, you know, that the progressives in PAS should think about their position, whether they should toe the line of the hardliners in PAS, or should they back out and form this new party, so-called, that embraces the new party embraces post-Islamism. Because I was looking back into the history of political Islam itself. If you look at the history in Turkey, for example, these ideas of having a parliamentary democracy and embracing Western concepts of liberal democracy, it all started way back in the 19th century. Mm. So it was during the Caliphate times that, you know, he sent young scholars to Europe to study over there. And these scholars were known as young Ottomans. And when they came back, they say that, you know, in order to revolutionize the system, we have to basically embrace parliamentary democracy, which is Western democracy, and modernize the system. But of course, unfortunately, that, you know, Sultan Abdul Hamid II, he basically, I think at that time, he dissolved the parliament, and, you know, it was the end of the young Ottomans. And right after young Ottomans, then came up the young Turks, we all are more familiar with Young Turks and Young Ottomans. And these Young Turks were led by Mustafa Kemal Ataturk. And, you know, like, I think we all knew about what happened to the caliphate. And I think it was abolished in 1924. And, you know, like, Muslims all over the world had a very sad experience with what is known as secularism. And that word secularism is basically, you know, being vilified, and Muslims everywhere, basically they see it as irreligious. Mm. You know, being a secular means that you are irreligious, means that you do not have any religious values in yourselves, and I think that is the main problem. So the thing now, to me, as I proposed in my thesis in 2013 to New Mandela, is that, no, we have to rethink about this whole idea of secularism, right? We have to inform the public about this idea, and we have to tell them that about this idea of post-Islamism itself. Because basically, post-Islamism is not anti-religion. That's the most important thing that we have to explain to them, right? And I think that, you know, it is... important for them to understand it's basically a kind of post-Islamism is like a tendency to re-secularize religion, and it is probably marked by what we call a limit to the to limit the political role of religion itself, and this concept is very important because it represents an endeavor to fuse religiosity with rights, faith and freedom, Islam with civil liberties, and focuses on the rights instead of duties and priority instead of singular authority, and to look at historicity instead of singular, instead of rigid and fixed interpretation of scriptures. And that is very important for us because, you know, like... to the Muslims in the past, to the past activists, they always use the term al-Islam wal-hal, means that Islam is the solution to all problems. Mm-hmm. But we have to see that's not the situation. We have to come back to the reality. Reality is that, you know, Islam lays down values and principles that we could adhere to the in the 21st century. Values of being amanah, being trustworthy, being you know, what they call with all the good values of trying to govern a society, you know, in a manner that is compatible to be the caliphate of God on this earth, and that is what is lacking among Muslims nowadays. They are the Muslim nations are the most corrupt nations on earth. You know, everywhere you go, you can see that.
But I'm considering the sort of complexities or sensibilities within the Malaysian politics and, you know, the voter interests. How would Amanah benefit from defining itself as a post-Islamic party? Can you sort of help us unpack that?
Yeah, it's a tricky question, basically, because, you see, I think that, you know, like, Amanah did not manage to make a breakthrough in the East Coast, right? They lost badly in Kelantan and Terengganu, and you know, and they only basically won in the West Coast, and I think this idea, this whole idea, they have to reformulate it and to educate the public, especially the kampung people about this idea. I know it's not going to be easy because you know, past to me, I think I wrote an article in Haraka. Last time, Haraka, the English version was quite liberal. I mean, the editor was very liberal. So, you know, my essay was published, The Literal, Two Faces of Literal Islam. I was looking at one past and the other one, you know, one is this particular Islam of past, which basically look at, you know, like everything is so simple. If you establish to pass, if you establish hudud on earth, on in Malaysia, basically, you know, you solve everything. So there is a simple kind of, you know, explanation to people, and people will understand this. You know, who are we to question God's laws? You know, past kept saying. So that's the whole issue. So now we have to re-educate people and tell them it's not as simple as that. You know, you need to use your rationality, right? And you need to embrace a form of pacifist secularism. You know, like, what do you call, even Rashid Kanushi, the leader of another entity in Tunisia, he said that, you know, we should embrace secularism. It is not against our religion, basically. Because basically, you know, like, you know, basically, Islam is not being, I mean, what you call the prophet himself did not try to teach how to govern a system or to govern a state. But, you know, it only requires our intellect and our rational faculty to do it. So that's the meaning of the word secularism itself.
But, you know, the idea of post-Islamism is, I guess, predicated on Islamic reform. Is this concept of Islamic reform one that Malaysian Muslims can get behind?
It is going to be tough. No, it's going to be tough. But I do not see that we can have an immediate effect. If you're thinking that whether we could win in the next election if we propose this, no. I would say in the negative. But if you look in the long term, you know, if you want to see our future generation in 20 years' time, that will be changed in our idea and our standing, our understanding of Islam and how to govern a state according to Islamic principles, meaning to have basically what you call Islam, you know, without without its Sharia implemented in the state. So I think that, you know, if you look at the long term, yes, we can achieve that, but not in the short term. They are going to lose, basically.
So what can Amanah do then to promote a narrative and image that can be better understood by the public?
To me, you know, like, they have to hold talks and commission, you know, like PAS, they have their charamas every night and talk to the people. And, you know, they have to do it. They have to go to the ground and do it. Apart from holding seminars and conferences in cities, they have to go to the ground. They have to go to people and talk to them. Talk in simple language, not, you know, highly intellectual kind of dialogue with them, but basically to explain to them in simple terms. And I think more importantly is that they have to have a think tank that could translate, you know, articles in English and in Arabic into Malay and to be disseminated among the people. Like, there's so many good articles by Rashid Kanushi, for example. Right. And many other articles from many other scholars, Muslim scholars in the West, that basically articulated these ideas. And I think Amanah should invest in getting scholars to translate these manuscripts and to disseminate to people to teach them about this new idea of post-Islamism.
Do you think we're ready and willing to accept a change in Islamic political thinking?
Well, it's a difficult question. I know my personal feeling is that, you know, like, if we work hard, you know, like what IRF has been doing all this while, trying to, you know, write, publish books and trying to disseminate new ideas, they must continue this. You know, like Dr. Zul, when he was, you know, when he left PAS initially. Right. He wanted to have this kind of think tank, but now he's a minister that I do not think that he has time to do all this. Someone else, or, you know, like a few others, should come up and try and do this. Establish a think tank that could, you know, invest their time and effort to try and, you know, re-articulate this in simple languages, in Malay, basically, in simple Malay, so that people could understand what they're talking about. And what's the whole idea? But the thing is that I personally think that not all the leaders in Amanah basically embrace post-Islamism. And, you know, like, I doubt whether, you know, the majority of them really understand what the concept is all about. Because, you know, like, I'm going to cite one example to show why I have this, this doubt inside me was because of this issue about this. You know, you still remember these two girls who were being flogged in public, you know, in Terengganu. Mm-hmm. Still remember that case?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Because, you see, this, what I read was that the youth, the Amanah youth of Terengganu supported the idea that, you know, these women should be flogged in public. And I think that's, you know, like, really alarming. It shows that they do not understand about the whole idea of punishment in Islam. And I think that, you know, it's very bad. Very, it gave a very bad precedent to the people to see that, you know, this is a kind of thinking of Amanah. There's nothing different from that of past. You could not find any difference if you still support that kind of harsh punishment. That's very degrading and humiliating. And what is this? This is not a new politics in Islam.
So I guess what it sounds to me is that, you know, before they even consider, while they also consider trying to change the general public's mindset, it does sound as if there is a requirement at least to start that mindset changing even within internally as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to start from... among the leaders, and, you know, they have to have a convention, right, and to think and debate about this whole idea, because this thing is not new. You know, Asif Bayat promoted it more than 10 years ago about this idea of post-Islamism. And I think that if you look at AKP in Turkey and you look at Nahdah in Tunisia, they were post-Islamist parties. Right. So if we really want to be a post-Islamic party, we have to do it. We have to emulate them. We have to learn from them. How did they form themselves? How did they transform from what you call an Islamist party to become a post-Islamist party? And I think that is very important.
Farouk, thank you so much for weighing in today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Right.
That was Dr. Ammar Farouk Moussa, founder and director of the Islamic Renaissance Front, talking to us about how Parti Amanah Negara should consider branding themselves and declaring themselves as post-Islamist. If you have any thoughts or any questions, you can send that to us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.